Good morning. The first case for the day is Appeal 043190, Hodgins v. Peterson. Good morning, Mr. Overholt.
Good morning.
In this case, the district court's decision entering a preliminary injunction was wrong for two related reasons. First, the district court held that parents have the fundamental right to allow their children to be out on the streets unsupervised at night, and in so doing ignored the Supreme Court's admonition to look at whether the right asserted was objectively and deeply rooted in our nation's history and is fundamental for the concept of ordered liberty.
Mr. Overholt, I guess this case really struck me in some ways as, you know, a shame in that obviously, as you recognize, you know, you're characterizing both the right and the district court's holding one way and your opponents the other way, and it's certainly not the first time we've seen iterations of this. And I have the feeling that in some ways the parties have come so close together. I mean, they haven't quite met yet, but it strikes me that if the state had one more exception in the ordinance along the lines perhaps of Dallas or along the lines of something like specific permission from the parents to be out in the curfew hours, first of all, perhaps many parents would never give that permission and the state's interest in the curfew would be fully protected. It would pick up, you know, the errand case or the visiting the hospital case. And I don't see anything in this legislation or in the other side's position that implies that Indiana has to repeal all of its many other laws protecting children, such as laws saying that parents can't deliberately put their children, you know, you couldn't, you know, park your child in the way of an oncoming train or something. So if a parent were irresponsible in exercising this authority, the state still has full power to protect the children. So I guess it really seems to me that, in fact, there's a very small difference between the parties here, and the district court was reflecting the fact that this parental power to give permission for a child to go out when the need seems adequate to the parent is really what we're talking about here.
I would agree with you, Your Honor, that parties have come much closer in terms of their relative positions. But when the General Assembly amended the state law, most recently in response to this court's earlier ruling about the First Amendment exception, it had the opportunity to add a clause or an exception, as you describe, a parental rights provision. But the legislature specifically decided not to do that.
And so, of course, the question is that a legitimate decision? You know, the parent is sick, a 24-hour pharmacy is there, it's a 16-year-old child who's legitimately obtained a driver's license. Can the parent say, please go pick up my prescription for me, even though it's 1 o'clock in the morning or 1:30 in the morning, you know, sometime after the curfew? Indiana says no.
Well, I'm not certain about that, Your Honor. Recall that one of the exceptions that's found in the current version of the curfew law is an emergency exception.
But I don't know that what I'm describing is an emergency. Sometimes you need medication, and it's not that you're going to die if you don't have it in the next 6 hours, mm-hmm. but you might be really uncomfortable. And it's not at all clear to me that that counts as an emergency.
And to the extent it doesn't, of course, there are still other alternatives available to the parent in that circumstance. For example, if the parent is not feeling well enough to drive, they could go ahead and accompany the child in the backseat.
Yeah, but what if they're not well enough to? Have you ever just had an upset stomach or you needed to be close to facilities? I mean, it's not. You have to admit that there are circumstances such as those that I'm describing which would not rise to the level of an emergency, but where a parent would have an absolutely legitimate reason to want the child, the older child who can drive, or go across the street to a neighbor's house to obtain some sort of assistance from an adult in the neighbor's house. I can think of situations without too much trouble where None of us would think the parent was being irresponsible, and yet the child walking across the street to the neighbor's house could be picked up by the police for violating curfew.
That's correct. And the question is, though,
even though the parent has specifically said, please go get this help.
Yes, that's true. But the General Assembly, in the exercise of its legislative judgment, made the decision when it balanced the risks to public safety, both for juveniles having the opportunity to go out and commit crimes or be the victims of crimes, that in its legislative judgment, the balance tipped in favor of public safety.
Now, look, if we agree with Judge Tinder that the evidence supporting the rationale for a curfew is quite weak, how could we sustain the curfew under intermediate scrutiny?
The district court did not properly consider the evidence put forth by the state in support of the curfew.
But didn't the statistics here show that crime goes down, not up, during curfew hours?
It is true generally throughout the nation that crime involving juveniles is at its highest immediately after school, in other words, in the late afternoon. But there are other facts that are in the record that clearly support the legislature's decision to not have this exception. For example, it is undisputed that during curfew hours are the highest numbers of incidents involving officer assault, where officers are assaulted, supporting the notion that, in fact, those curfew hours are some of the most dangerous times of the day. Moreover,
do you think that would justify a curfew across the board? I mean, certainly an adult woman walking around in the middle of the night, according to you, is in some risk of being assaulted, too.
No, I don't, because adults are different than minors. There's no question.
Why? In terms of the risk to them?
In terms of the risk, no.
So
let me take that back. I think minors are more at risk. Certainly, everyone is at risk, potentially, more so at night. But with minors, the Supreme Court has been very clear that the power to regulate is greater. But one other thing I want to point out, getting back to Judge Williams' question, the statistics put forth in the record are compelling with regard to the interest that the state has in having this curfew. During curfew hours between 2001 and 2003, there were 4 murders committed by juveniles, 10 forcible rapes, 22 robberies, 63 burglaries, 124 vehicle thefts, and 192 assaults committed by juveniles during curfew hours.
And the number of juveniles in the area?
Yes.
No, I'm saying, and the number of thousands of juveniles in the area? Do you know that number? Because the only way those numbers really take on real significance, we have to look at proportionality, don't we? That wasn't there, was it, in the record, to put those numbers in perspective?
There are numbers regarding the numbers of arrests,
right,
of adults, for example. So you could look at adults versus juveniles. But in terms of an absolute number, no, that is not in the record.
And the proportion of adults versus juveniles? Did the statistics show it was higher? I can't recall that number was there, but I could have missed that.
I'm sorry, I don't recall.
That's a problem, too, because when you compare adults and juveniles, what's the proportion? And what's the proportion when you look at the, adult population or the juvenile population?
Well, I'm not sure it does matter. I think those numbers alone are sufficient for the state to be able to articulate and put forth a limitation on the ability of juveniles to be out at night. Again, not out exercising First Amendment rights or doing one of the other things listed in the exceptions, but just to be out at night doing whatever they want.
Now, you frame the right as limited to the hours of a particular curfew, as you've suggested in the briefs, then aren't you saying the right might be different in Indiana than it might be in another state or municipality, which might have longer or shorter curfew hours?
First of all, If you're suggesting that I agree there is a fundamental right to allow for parents to have the care, custody, and control of their children, yes. I mean, that clearly has been stated by the court. What has not been stated by the courts is whether that fundamental right extends to the fundamental right to allow your children to be out any time of the night. And again, our position is there is no such fundamental right. And I don't think...
Well, the only fundamental right, I really think it's important to stress this, that anyone's talking about is subject to the other obligations a parent has, not to contribute to the delinquency of a minor, not to allow their child to do, you know, remember even back as far as the snake handling cases, parents do not have the right to endanger their children. And so that's already there in Indiana law. Nothing in this law restricts it, extends it, or anything else. This is just a particular instance about whether between these various curfew hours, the weekday and the weekend hours, a parent... We ought to add parental control to the situations where the minors are coming home from work or coming home from, you know, First Amendment activities, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know the exceptions.
And you make a very good point. And it's exactly because this type of issue here touches on public safety. It deals with the kinds of cases that you're talking about, the snake handlers, the other kinds of public safety concerns, limitations on the ability of minors to drink alcohol, drive a car. All those kinds of things are public safety issues that give the states the right to regulate.
But don't this they need to be rational? It's just hard for me to see, in light of the other exceptions, why this one adds or it can even be distinguished.
Well, it adds because... This exception, if added, would allow children to be out for any reason whatsoever.
Only if the parent, any parent who wants the kind of help, one of your other rationales, who wants the kind of help that the state is trying to give to reinforce parental curfews, won't give permission. So all of those children will be subject to the curfew exactly as written. Only those whose parents see a particular instance and a particular need would be out. And that's the same as those parents who've decided to let the kid have a job or to go to the event or what have you.
But under-inclusiveness can't be a justification for holding the statute unconstitutional.
If it's intermediate scrutiny, then we do need to look at the match between the justifications and the limitation on rights.
And I think, given cases such as Prince, where the Supreme Court held that, and which is still good law.
That's a child labor case, though. I mean, you're really extending that pretty far, aren't
you? Well, the holding of Prince says two things, right? Prince says that the state has the right to keep children off the streets at night, even if their parents are with them. And that opinion, which was talked about in Washington versus Glucksberg, is still the law. Secondly, even if the holding cannot be extended to this case, it is a clear indication that the right, the purported right for children to be out unsupervised at night is not something well established in this country's jurisprudential history. I'd like to reserve my remaining time for rebuttal.
Thank you. All right.
Good morning. I'm sorry. May it please the court. The United States Supreme Court has held that substantive due process protects, as a fundamental right of parents to make critical decisions concerning the care, custody, and control of their children.
But, Mr. Falk, I want to turn around the question that I asked Mr. Overhaul for you. In light of the fact that another thing the Supreme Court has repeatedly been reminding us of in recent years is that substantive due process is a doctrine that needs to be handled with great care.
Yes, sir.
And as I suggested to Mr. Overholt, in some ways the parties have come so close, and one could almost, as he was suggesting, characterize this dispute that remains between you as one about what is, in fact, the scope of this emergency exception. If that's read broadly enough, then perhaps it does cover those legitimate instances. You know, the legislatures don't have to have a perfect match between a concern they have.
But the emergency exception is quite narrow, especially compared to other statutes. The Indiana's emergency exception only applies if the child is out because of the risk of imminent threat of serious bodily harm or substantial damage to property, which is, I would suggest, an extreme emergency. The issue, of course, when you're dealing with substantive due process, because of the Supreme Court's admonitions, is that we must define the right discreetly and narrowly, but of course not so specifically that it loses all meaning. So the trial court here described the right as the right of a parent to decide if their child can be in public without direct parental supervision.
You know, some states have these home alone statutes that prohibit parents from leaving children under a certain age, I think 12, at home unattended by an adult. Do you see a constitutional problem with those statutes? And if not, how are they different from curfews?
Well, and, you know. Yes, Your Honor. I do see a constitutional problem in the sense that it is the parent's primary, if not sole, responsibility of nurturing the child to the point where the child is able to be independent. That, of necessity, requires that before the child becomes 18, there are times when the parent allows the child to be somewhere without direct supervision. Now, at some point, it obviously is criminal to leave your child by themselves, which is why Indiana has laws that deal with endangering dependents.
And you don't think that the state can simplify that by perhaps drawing the line at age 12 or at age 10 or some
yes.
age?
I certainly do. But that gets to the second part of the question. The first question is there a constitutional right implicated? The second part is, under the requisite scrutiny, does that satisfy what I think this court and the Supreme Court has required to be elevated scrutiny? In that situation, when you're having a young child, intermediate scrutiny would be satisfied because there would be a substantial risk of harm to the child if the child is left alone. The Indiana statute applies to children, quote-unquote children, who have graduated from high school, happen to have birthdays in the summer, who are going to be 18, who graduate from high school, maybe on their way to college, maybe on their way to jobs, but still cannot go out after 11 o'clock on a summer night.
Suppose the statute said something like, well, I mean, of course, there's already a separate provision for children less than 15 years of age. And suppose the section about the children 15, 16, or 17 handled the defenses differently. I mean, I don't see why it's insane for the state to say a child age 14 shouldn't be out at 3 o'clock in the morning. You're not going to be sending that child off to the all-night pharmacy.
No, I think that would be a very unusual circumstance, and certainly given the plain intermediate scrutiny, perhaps the statute could be written that way. Although, unlike other statutes, which may have been upheld by other courts in response to attacks of parental rights, Indiana doesn't even have an exception for allowing the child to be out on the sidewalk contiguous to the property, which you can certainly hypothesize on a summer night, sitting on the sidewalk talking to the neighbor. Under Indiana laws, it's currently written, even if you're 14, 15, 16, 17, you'd be subject to arrest.
Are you allowed to sit in your front yard? Are you specifying the sidewalk because that's now the city property?
That's correct.
Property?
That's
yeah.
correct.
Yeah.
The problem, of course, is we do have, I believe, the trial court did narrowly define the right as required by substantive due process, and as narrowly defined, that if this is a key parental duty to prepare the child for the additional obligations.
But you do have cases like Ginsburg. I mean, there's so many cases, as Mr. Overholt points out, that specifically permit legislatures to be paternalistic, if you will,
that's
with
true.
Respect to children.
But, Your Honor, if I could interrupt.
And we have to draw lines. I mean, you're right about some children being 17 when they graduate from high school. That's just line drawing. We all know about.
Of course, Your Honor. But, of course, line drawing must be done with greater specificity when we're talking elevated scrutiny. And even in Ginsburg, the Supreme Court acknowledged parental rights by specifically indicating the decision that a parent could buy this material, which the state had deemed to be harmful, and then give it to their child.
Look, suppose we agree with you that there has to be a parental consent exception to the curfew. Could the city or the county insist that kids who are out during curfew hours carry special IDs reflecting that their parents have given them the authority to be out past curfew.
Yes, Your Honor. In fact, subsequent to this court's last decision in this case, the Indiana legislature this term did in fact propose a bill which would, if enacted into law, would have allowed parents to give written permission to their children. The bill died because of a political squabble that had nothing to do with the bill per se, and it did not become law. But that, somewhat artificial, but that would certainly satisfy the parental rights here, and I think satisfy the state's concerns.
And is it your view that that bill has no chance to be revived?
The Indiana legislature meets in sessions which end at particular times. This session has ended. What the next year will bring, I do not know. This session is now over. And as I'm telling the court what we have already informed the court in our pleadings, because we had asked to defer argument because of the pendency of that bill and then informed them the bill.
Yeah, of course, I'm sitting here thinking about sending you to the settlement office.
Well, I don't think that the city, the defendant here, and I could negotiate a change in Indiana law.
Well, even though the district court described the laws not having enough substantial evidence to prove that crimes, juvenile or otherwise, occurred during curfew hours, aren't the observations and opinions of various police officials that juveniles are more likely to become involved in crime and to be victimized during the nighttime curfew, isn't that enough to validate the law?
I don't think that was the evidence in the record. The evidence in this record, there were affidavits from the former case from officers who said things are bad at night, crime gets worse at night. Mm-hmm. But that was directly contradicted by the witness produced by the city, Captain Allender, who testified that in Indianapolis and the country as a whole, the primary time for juvenile crime is the immediate hours after school, and that juvenile crime actually goes down at night. Further, Captain Allender quite candidly testified that juveniles intent on committing serious crime are going to commit those crimes regardless of whether there's a curfew or not. And finally, as far as victimization is concerned, there's absolutely no evidence, statistical or otherwise, in the record to support any argument as to who is victimized during curfew. Those statistics simply aren't kept.
But, you know, Mr. Falk, it really seemed to me, looking particularly at this article you included in your appendix by Professor Adams, that behind all of this is really just a policy disagreement between your clients and the legislature of Indiana on whether juvenile curfews make any sense. And, of course, there could be a policy disagreement. That's what we have legislatures for.
Well, and that would be the response, I believe, if I was arguing here that Indiana's curfew law is unconstitutional as to all juveniles because of this lack of evidence. But that's not what we're here for. We're here talking about the fact that parents have this protected right to make these decisions. A parent is presumed constitutionally to act in the best interests of their children, but yet the state is stepping in and saying, you can't do that. And there needs to be evidence, and the evidence needs not to be directed to curfew in general, although, as I said, the evidence in this case tends to point that curfew is not particularly efficacious.
In following up on Judge Wood's question, is it appropriate for us to be looking at the data on the rationale and efficacy of curfews? Doesn't that job really belong to the legislature rather than to us?
Well, again, Your Honor, we're not saying that curfews are not efficacious in general. What we're saying is if you are going to be impinging on this fundamental right of the parent, if you're going to be presuming that the parent is not acting in the best interest and forbidding the parent to act, then there must be evidence. There must be substantial evidence, exceedingly persuasive evidence, according to the Supreme Court. And it must be targeted at the group of children who are being prohibited from going out. There's no evidence at all which speaks to the risk of victimization or the risk of criminal behavior of children allowed out with parental permission. And that evidence is particularly necessary here because the state, through its various exceptions to the statute, concedes that children can be out during curfew without coming to harm and without causing harm.
Yeah, there are, as I think we've noted, there are quite a few exceptions to the curfew. And the hours of the curfew aren't particularly expansive. So, I mean, would you concede at all, although I know that's a bad word, that any interference with parental decision-making here is minimal?
No, Your Honor. Unlike, as I said, I believe, unlike every other case which has upheld a parental rights, upheld a curfew against a parental rights challenge, Indiana has no general errand exception. It has no exception for children out on their sidewalks. It has no ability for the parent to say, go to the drugstore, for the parent to say, walk the dog, pick up relatives at the airport, go to your friends down the street and you're studying for an algebra exam. You're going to a concert. You're going to prom, and you want to go somewhere afterwards. There's absolutely no exceptions for that. Now, those rights taken in and of themselves are maybe even petty. But together, that is the right that the parent has to decide if the child is mature enough to handle the increasing responsibility aiming toward adulthood. And Indiana statute simply doesn't have the play that other statutes might to allow the parents to do that, which is why I believe the court properly found it to be unconstitutional.
Well, does the right of the parent extend to the upbringing of, as it relates to the upbringing of children, extend to allow six-year-olds to stay out all night?
No, Your Honor, and that is why there is a statute in Indiana that criminalizes neglect of a dependent.
And so that's where that would kick in?
Yes, Your Honor. It would there be civil, child need of services type provisions as well. The parents are not free agents. They operate in a system where they are not allowed to injure their children. But again, the Supreme Court has stressed repeatedly in Troxell that constitutionally the parent is presumed to act in the best interests of their child. But yet you have the state of Indiana here saying to the parents, we're taking that away from you. You can't act. We are presuming you are not acting in their best interest in this limited area. And that's why the statute's unconstitutional.
And is this is the hearing on the merits, the underlying permanent injunction, awaiting the outcome of this, or is it going forward? What's happening with that?
At this point, Your Honor, I believe that has been stayed pending a decision in this case.
Thank you.
Although I do not know if there's been a formal stay, but that has certainly been the understanding of the parties. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Falk. Mr. Overholt, you have 2 minutes.
In its earlier decisions, the United States Supreme Court has found that this duty, this right of parents to exercise care, custody, and control over their children extends to rights regarding education, association, and religious upbringing. That's all. With regard to issues that deal with public safety, whether it's smoking, drinking alcohol, being able to drive a car, all those other things that go outside the immediate home environment of the children, it is beyond dispute that states have the right to regulate. And that's what we're talking about here. We're talking about whether the state can stop irresponsible parents from letting their children wander around the streets of Indianapolis in the middle of the night. That's what this case is about. And there is nothing in the Supreme Court's jurisprudence that supports the idea that somehow states don't have that right.
Why are you assuming the parents are irresponsibly going to exercise a parental permission?
I'm not assuming in every
position.
Instance they...
Because that's, I guess, according to the response to Judge Rovner's question, the state could even say, parents have to pre-certify their children with the local police department so they get a special ID card before they can go around at night or whatever. I wonder why you're saying irresponsible parents.
I'm not presuming that all parents are irresponsible. Of course I'm not.
I mean, a lot of them wouldn't give permission to begin with, and then of those who gave permission, presumably a lot of them would be exercising that.
But unfortunately, a lot of parents wouldn't give permission, wouldn't care. They would just not care. They would let their children wander around.
Why do you think that?
Because looking at the curfew records, you can see the numbers of juveniles who've been arrested.
Right. I mean, these are juveniles in the face of the curfew regulation who've been arrested. So I'm not sure that actually tells us the curfew regulation is all that effective. But
and one other point. There are other decisions that, in fact, have upheld, because we talked a little bit about strict scrutiny, the Quitib case upheld a curfew statute under strict scrutiny. And I see my time is up. Thank you.
Did you want to finish your thought?
Just this. They've been upheld under strict scrutiny, and we have cases like Washington and Glucksberg, Flores and Reno, that again define the scope of an area where the state has the right to regulate. And this is a public safety issue, and therefore it has the right to regulate. Thank you.
Well, thank you to both Mr. Overholt, Mr. Falk. The case will be taken under advisement.